You're listening to the APC Podcast, the Association of People Supporting Employment First, with your host, Chris Davies. Today's podcast is brought to you by Reach for Resources, a nonprofit providing individualized, competitive employment services for people with disabilities. We believe our community is a better place when it is inclusive and everyone, regardless of ability, has the chance to be successful. Learn more at reachforresources.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Minnesota APC Podcast, Season 4, Episode 3. We are on location today at Epic Enterprise in Dundas, Minnesota, with none other than Gary Otto. Hello, Gary.
Hello, sir.
We're very excited for this interview today with Gary. He's a fascinating man, with a lot of fascinating stories to share with us. Gary actually works here at Epic Enterprise as a life enrichment associate and, has so, I think, now for 7 years. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Yeah, for 7 years. So we're very excited to hear more about, Gary's story and what he does, you know, here at Epic, as well. But as everybody knows, that's watched the podcast before, and for anybody new, I like to talk a little bit about APC and Minnesota APC. So if you're just happening to be watching or listening to this podcast for the first time, welcome. It's great to have you on board. APC stands for the Association for People Supporting Employment First. It is a national organization, and it is the only membership organization of its kind that is truly 100% focused on integrated, customized, competitive employment. So real jobs, real wages, just real life. And I know you're all about that, aren't you, Gary?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's what APC is. And we're the local chapter here in Minnesota, and we've been doing this podcast for 4 years. And whenever we get to this point, you know, of the podcast, we like to kind of give a visual description of ourselves. So I'll go first, Gary, and then I'll ask you to. But for me, I am a white male. I am bald. I have a red beard, although I did just trim it down quite a bit, so it's not as bright and bushy as it normally is. I'm wearing blue jeans today, and I have like a button-up checkered flannel shirt. So, Gary, please describe yourself.
I am also a white male, have white hair receding, and I have blue jeans on with a blue t-shirt.
Thank you. All right, so let's get into it. Gary, thank you so much for joining us today. We met last week and had a great sort of prep meeting, and I understand you've listened to a couple of our podcasts. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, so thanks for being a fan. We appreciate it. You probably know that one of the first things I always like to ask our guests is simply, tell us more about yourself, you know, your personal background, growing up, any you know, thing that you want to tell us from your school days. It's an open canvas, so take it away.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I grew up in a small town called New Trier. Population is 95. I went through I'm the fourth of 11 kids. Went to Catholic school, wasn't very good in schools, not meanly good. I'm illiterate. I do not know how to spell or read the majority of all words. For instance, my wife, I think I reset her letters about 2,000 times, and I finally remember how to spell her name that way. I had to just keep repeating.
And what is your wife's name?
My wife's name is Cheryl, with an S-H-E-R-Y-L, so I got that down pat.
Very nice. I love that. And hi to Cheryl.
Yes. It was a small Catholic school, and seems I wasn't able to read very well. or at all. My dad and mom moved me to Hastings School, and I didn't do that good there either. I've also had several different ladies, teachers try to help me read, and I just could not get it. So the Catholic school in New Trier was down in numbers, so my parents decided to bring me back to New Trier for seventh grade, which I didn't cope well with the nuns at all. And
what year was this, Gary?
I want to say it was back in the 60s, about 68, 69. And so the nun let me know right away. She knew some of the stuff I was like from Hastings School. And she just said, this isn't going to happen here. And she had me sit right up front all during school. And she was a no-nonsense lady. And one day, I did something wrong, and she had me go talk to the minister. And I come back, and I sat down at my desk, and she goes, what did Father say? He told me to come back and sit at my desk. And one of the kids I grew up with said, I told you he won't do nothing wrong. The priest is his dad's drinking buddy. And that didn't go over well, so we both got sent to the coat closet for the rest of the day because we thought it was funny, but she didn't. So that was the life of seventh grade. And the next year was back to Hastings. And a lot of the kids, when I got back there, they'll go, what happened to you? I says, my dad decided I need to go to Catholic school. And they go, you poor guy. And back then, everybody had nicknames. And my name was Sod. Hardly anybody ever called me Gary. It was Sod. And a lot of people asked why. Because when I was 7 years or 6 or 7 years old, my ma had twins. And one of the neighbors in town had a business called, he had Gordy Sodfield up in Coates, Minnesota. So Gordy took me with him a couple days to go roll up sod. And I got dirty. And I enjoyed being away from my brothers and sisters for 8 hours of the day, just getting dirty and having fun doing it. After that, I'm going to move on to 75, I lost my father due to cancer. And back in 74, they decided to change the drinking age to 18. Well, I was still in school at 18 and...
Sorry to interrupt you, Gary. What was it before they changed it to 18?
So 21.
Okay, so they brought it back down.
Yeah, they brought it down. Well, that was the first time they brought it down to 18.
I was wondering if it was like 16 and when 18 to 21. So it went 21 to 18 and then
correct.
Back up. Okay.
And that's when I really started going downhill. Because the guys I hung around with, Gary, you're old enough. Let's go to Prescott and get some beer. So we'd sneak out of school, go to Prescott and buy beer and come back and had no care in the world. After I lost my father was very strict and, Gary decided to keep drinking and I just ended up drinking 7 days a week. Gary only thought of Gary. There was times where I did do stuff for my mother, brothers and sisters, but for the most of the time, I wanted to drink. And I had seen no problem in it. Well, finally the law caught up to me on my second DUI. The first one was a slap on the hands. The second one, I was thankful the people I worked for helped me find a treatment center, and I was in treatment from June 6th to March 20th, January, February, September, October, November 24th. I know I would have never been able to stay sober again for a 30-day program, and I was thankful that I had it. I had enough of living in downtown St. Paul in a halfway house, and when I got left and got out, I promised my mom I'd never, excuse me, I'd never
it's okay.
drink again, and I haven't. So this coming June 6th, I'll have 47 years.
Wow. Congratulations, Gary.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
47 years of sobriety. And I do not miss it. Thank you. I do not miss it one bit. Although there's a lot of flavors out there that I never got to try because they weren't on the market when I quit. So I just got to say, oh, God, I'm glad I don't drink root beer.
Well, I can tell you, I don't drink very much, but you're not missing anything.
No.
They're not that good. I know everybody that seems to like them, but I don't know.
I have no problem.
Not for me.
Being around people that drink, that's their choice. I don't condemn anybody. I just don't wish anybody to be like I was.
Yeah, that's, well, I think, you know, getting to know you a little bit last week and here with you today, my impression of you is one of your true gifts is giving to others and helping others. And,
yes.
So when you stopped drinking 47 years ago, that enabled you to share that gift with
Correct.
All of us. So it wasn't just a gift to you, but I, and as we'll hear shortly, just all the different people you've touched over the years.
Right. So,
and thank you for, you know, sharing that with us.
Yep. And shortly after being sober a year, I lost my eyesight to a hunting accident. And the day I lost my eyesight would have been me and my wife's first date. I asked her the night before if she would like to go to the state fair, and that would have been September 2nd, and she wasn't able to. So I got up early that morning, and we went and asked a fellow to make us some shells, and me and four other guys went out, and we were shooting squirrels, and I was mistaken for a squirrel.
Oh, boy.
And when I got hit, everything just turned black, hot, and then numb. I mean, instantly. And the guy was with, young man I was with that day, I'm just going to say his nickname was Hop Sing. That's what we called him, Hoppy. And then the other guy that was with me, he was behind me. He also fell. And they just come, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I remember telling them to get me to the hospital. So Hop Sing grabbed me and carried me. They dragged me for a while. And then when it come to a barbed wire fence, I crawled. And then Hop Sing, he was a very strong young man. He picked me up and put me over his shoulders and carried me out of the woods the rest of the way. And the other fellow, I'm not going to use his name. And he went and got his car close to the woods, and they got me to Cannon Falls. I remember getting to Cannon Falls. I remember getting in the ambulance to go to Rochester Mail. And the officer was sitting in the back asking me questions, and I said, give me some ice, my throat itches. And so they put ice chips on my teeth, so I went swallow, and got to the hospital. I remember coming to on the operating table when they were going to put a tube in the left side of my lung to drain my lungs, and the doctor says, get them under, and I ended up, I had to retch. And I pulled a tube out of my mouth so I could retch. And then after that, I was 4 days later coming out of recovery and stuff. Still wasn't able to talk. I knew my mom was there, my older brother, my sisters, but all they could say is they're here and stuff. And the first words that I said is when my mom said, "Hoppy's here." And I just said his name. And I just, at first, just didn't want to talk. I just thought in my head, where am I at? What did I do? How did this happen?
It must have been so confusing at the time.
Yeah, it was. But all the friends I had through the 24 days of recovery and stuff, they would come down and visit me and stuff. And my wife, Cheryl, we weren't married yet, but she come down to visit me. And when I got out of the hospital and stuff, I proceeded my quest is to convince her I wanted her for the rest of my life. So we started dating. We dated for 4 months. I asked her 3 different times if she would marry me. The third time she said yes. And we'll have 45 years this September. And we have 2 sons. I adopted her son. He's going to be 40. He's 48. And my youngest son, his birthday's today on the 22nd. He's 44.
Happy birthday.
Yes, William.
My son's name.
And so I'm very thankful that my genes of drinking didn't pass on to him.
Yeah.
Because they say it's in the genes.
That's a big part of it for sure.
I think my wife did good washing back then.
Yes. Thank goodness for that.
Yes.
What a story. Thank you for having the courage to be vulnerable with us today and, you know, tell us that story. I've heard a lot of love stories in my lifetime and how people met, stay together. That is definitely the most probably unique story I've heard about how someone ended up with their life partner. That's an amazing story, and she sounds like an amazing, amazing person.
She sure certainly is. She kept a roof over our house. Now, I was a guy that liked to run every day of the week. Well, every Friday and Saturday night, we went out. We got married. 8.5 months later, her son was born. And it's a Friday night, and she's back on her feet and stuff from having the baby. And I go to get dressed, and she goes, "Where are you going?" I says, "Ain't we going out?" She goes, "No, we got bills to pay." I go, "Oh." Didn't have no response for that one to counter into going out. So I just had to accept it, looking back at my AA stuff. There is more to the future than just me and going out. We have a family to raise, and she let me know it in kind ways that kids and us got to come first before friends. And that's the way we raised our kids. We did go out and stuff, but not like we did when we were teenagers. We had to grow up and be adults. Well, I had to grow up and be an adult.
I appreciate your honesty around that issue. It is. I mean, becoming an adult is a real thing, and it's something I struggled with, that's for sure. Mm. And people that know me might still wonder, but Yeah, it's such a great way to look at it. And you can't really give anything you don't have. And so if you're not taking care of home and taking care of your family, then how are you going to kind of go out in the world and do all the things you do? You also adopted some folks, or would you say fostered or adopted three people?
Yes, we in 1978 1997 we bought a different house and had nice land with it and stuff. It was a large rambler in Cannon Falls, and boys were out of school, and the youngest son was in the Marine Corps. And we decided to open our house. Our sister-in-law, Paulette, she told us about if we open up our house and take care of adults that are too able to be in a nursing home but not able enough to be on their own. We checked in with the county and of Goodyear, and we instantly had people that wanted to bring their loved ones with to us and stuff. So we had three ladies that were in their low 90s, late 80s, live with us. And wherever me and Cheryl went to weddings, or Cheryl took them to baby showers and stuff. And Cheryl also worked three different jobs, you know, counting that one. But I mainly stayed home. Cheryl would give me a verbal list of what needs to be done and stuff. Our mother-in-law used to come over and help bathe them. But it was giving. I just got into taking care of other people. When I was out of the hospital back when I got shot, Father Clares was our minister at the time, and my two cousins come and got me. They lived in the same town, and they were way younger than I was. And they took me for walks in town. And Father Clares said, "Gary, you might not understand right now why God took your eyesight, but someday you will understand why your eyesight was taken. And it's all about me wanting to not stop giving, helping other people." And I really believe that was the goal for me, instead of just being me. It isn't just me there. It's other people that I enjoy helping.
Yeah, it sounds like when you know that losing your eyesight didn't slow you down. If anything, from what I'm hearing you say, it gave you more of a purpose and took you places to maybe you didn't know you could go. Would you agree with that?
Correct.
And it sounds like you learned, as we were saying a minute ago, and you were saying that you are a giver, and you sort of, when you took the three ladies in, the seniors, it began your journey of giving as a caregiver. And can you tell us more about just sort of that dedication that has lasted, you know, since, if I'm correct, going back to 1998.
Yes. Besides taking care of the three ladies that lived with us, we had them until Luella was 97, Jesse was 96, and we had a lady that was 65. Her name was Diane. And after we took care of them people, I had a year off of work, and I just didn't know what to do with myself. So I started a salsa garden.
And That sounds like a great thing to do if you're not sure what to do.
That kept me busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So after that, my sister-in-law, she also opened up three homes in Cannon Falls. That was called The View. She had three homes. There was five rooms to a building, and she had five people, senior citizens, in her senior citizen living homes. And I went to work for her. And my jobs, I took care, I helped take care of the cleaning. I vacuumed. I would disinfect the bathrooms once a week after showers and stuff. I helped do dishes. I scrubbed the floors. I would Murphy's oil every 6 months the woodwork. I would climb a ladder and change out light bulbs, dust off the chandeliers. I would help even cook. So that lasted, I did that for, from 86 to 90, 2015. And I just didn't know what to do when I left there. When the girls would say, this one girl went to work one day, and she goes, Gary, I'm glad you're working with me today. It at least looked like I did something. Well, my brother-in-law is the boss. His name's Leon.
Okay.
And I said, Leon, I'm sorry, but I'm putting my 2 weeks' notice in now. And he goes, if you feel you have to. And when I went home that night, I said, what am I going to do now? So I did my 2 weeks, and I happened to call my mother. She lived in Dundas, Minnesota here. Mm-hmm. And I says, Mom, I'm done working for my brother-in-law. I said, can you help me find a job? And she says, Gary. A couple days later, she called me and she says, call this number here. It's called Epic. They're looking for workers. And it's just down the road from my house. So I called. And I got the lady that worked here. Her name was Linda Hubbard.
Yes. And I've met Linda. Great person.
I told her who I was. I explained why I'm calling. And she says, hang on 1 minute, Gary. So then I talked to a lady named Lynn, and I said the same thing. I was looking for a job. All my jobs I had when I could see were learn as the job goes. I didn't have to read anything. So it was work as you go, learn the steps, do this. And I explained that's how I'm able to do jobs. And I says, I was right up front, and I said, since I quit drinking, I became a very honest person. And I says, I will not tell a lie on anything if I can't hide it, which I don't try hiding stuff. Then a couple of weeks late after the phone calls, or it could have been 2 months, they called me up and asked me to come in for an impersonal interview and to fill out an application. So my wife, Cheryl, brought me over, and I filled out an application. They asked me some more questions on how they would be best to help me. Well, thankfully, Linda was able to call Social Security Disability Place in Rochester, and a lady from the social service says, come up to meet me. And they picked me up at my house in Cannon and brought me over to Dundas, and we sat down, and they were able to help me. The Social Security people used to help me get a machine. I don't know what it's called, but I can put a piece of paper on it. It'll take a picture, and it'll read me what was on the paper. Sure. So that's how I do all my charting, not charting, but things us workers at Epic need to know about our clients that are in disability, mm-hmm. their disability stuff.
Yeah, the critical things to supporting them, helping them.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
So after 3-4 months, Catherine was the lady from Social Security. She asked Linda, she says, well, you need to make up your mind if Gary is able to work here. You're going to hire him? Or he's got to save some months in case he finds something else for help training.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And Linda said, Gary, May 1st will be your starting date. And I was very, very happy that they did hire me. And all the girls that I work with here, I have no problem asking me for assistance on anything I need done. And what man wouldn't want to work with a building full of women, you know? It's just great.
You stumped me on that one, Gary.
It's
first
just,
time.
It's great.
And now here you are, 7 years later.
Yes.
I'm getting a chance to meet you, and you're telling us your story.
Mm-hmm.
That is great. And, you know, and you took us on a little tour a minute ago, we really got a sense that, you know, all of your coworkers here, that you're really here for each other as well as the people that you're supporting.
Correct. One of the challenges I did for myself when I first started is, well, they put me in the north room, and that's with the elderly adults. There was this guy, Richard. He's not here no more. I lost all contact with him. And he became my buddy. And I told Richard, I knew guys that he used to work with in Lakeville that also had disabilities. And I told him their name. And we were buds. And when I first started working, he would come up to me and he goes, Gary, they're out in the hall watching you. And I go, what am I doing wrong? Nothing. I just thought I'd tell you, they're watching you. And it was Linda, Lynn, and I don't know who else. I knew it was them. They were making sure I was doing something. You know, I was still fitting in.
Sure.
Well, the lady that was in charge of the room back there, she always would tell me, oh, just sit down and play trouble with Richard. By the time I tell you how to do something, I got it done. So they put me in the south room, and it was younger adults, from 21, I would say, up to 40. And there was this one girl that always would sit in the corner, look in the mirror, and just go, Jimmy, 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 Jimmy's in the mirror. And she loved singing. So I took it upon myself to go over to her and say, hi, I'm Gary. Will you sing with me? And we'd go with Hickory Dickory Dock. She'd go right in it. I mean, I don't know all the nursery kids' songs, but she would help me finish it. It was great. So I always would say, I'm Gary. By the time COVID hit, she was always looking for me and hollering my name.
Sure.
Gary, Gary, Gary's down the hall. Gary, Gary's in the red room. And when COVID hit, she was in her day home in Laura Baker in Northfield. And one of the workers come here to work after COVID hit. Oh, man, you're the Gary that she's always singing and looking for. And I go, yep, I'm him.
I told you were famous before this started, didn't I?
Yes. And then we had a gentleman, his name was Jim, James. He was a wheelchair male, and he didn't talk much at all. Okay. He very, very, he would just growl, you know, sort of words. Well, one day, I was walking down the hall, and by accident, he was coming around the corner, and I jumped, and he just laughed because he scared me. And I just jumped back because I was afraid I was going to fall forward on him. And all he could do is sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh. So every day, his goal was to try to sneak up on me or spook me.
Oh, yeah.
And he got a kick out of that. Well, by the time James went to a different facility in Faribault to work, he was seeing Gary. You know, he was getting Gary out.
Sounds Irish.
Yeah, and miss the man a lot. You know, everyone helped in the 7 years that aren't here no more. They're well thought of in my mind.
Well, you definitely had a gift for have a gift for connecting with people. It sounds like you really help people kind of actualize, you know, come out of their shell, so to speak, which is just such a tremendous gift. Any other things that you want to talk about in terms of that you really are important to you, you know, here at your work with Epic Enterprise or anything?
Yeah, I have one more client that Lynn come up before she quit, and she goes, Gary, I got a goal for you. We're trying to get, I don't want to say his name, so this man out of the sensory room. And when he would come every day, the sensory room he considered his space. He didn't want nobody in there but him. He would sort of, that's what he wanted to do. That's where he wanted to be. He didn't want anybody bugging him. So I go, oh, thanks a lot. So I started knocking on the door, and I would go in, and I go, well, hi, my name's Gary, and I would like to get to know you. Why? Was his answer. I says, Lynn said I should get to know you because you're a very interesting man. And he was very knowledgeable on any animal. You would bring up an animal, he would tell you where it lives, where it was, what country it was in, what its likes and dislikes were. Well, I liked hunting and stuff. I liked big game animals, pheasants and stuff, so I'd get him talking. So now they said, I need to get him out of the room to come out for a while to do something. So I said, you want to come down and make sure I can clean the I got to clean the kitchen and stuff. I says, can you watch me to make sure I don't miss a spot or do it correctly? When I would do something wrong on purpose, I'd get this, and I go, did I miss something? Yes, he'd whisper real harsh. I says, well, do me a favor. You squirt the stuff down and I'll wipe. And then you can make sure I get it dry. So I got him out once a week for 45 minutes to clean the kitchen counters, microwaves. If there's any dirty stuff, make sure it got in the washing machine and stuff. So that's how I was able to get him out. And they go, what did you do to get him out? I said, I told them I wanted to get to know him. They asked me to get to know him and stuff. And then they says, well, see if you can get him out of there. And I says, that's what I come up with. Well, now that COVID hit, we don't have him here no more.
Yeah.
You know, so COVID really put a damper in a lot of different things.
Yeah, what a, it certainly has, but what a great story about, you know, just connecting with somebody over their interests. You know, you seem to have a real ability just to not make things complicated, you know, and sort of meet people where they're at in ways that make sense to them. you know, and, yes. and that's a universal, kind of skill and trait. That's pretty cool. Yeah. You know, we're starting to kind of get, to the point where we sort of wind down on the podcast, and I usually ask sort of a very open-ended, you know, last question. But before I do that, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about today that maybe we haven't touched upon?
Just, I want to give thanks to all the girls that work here at Epic. They're a marvelous bunch of ladies that I work with. Some of the clients got nicknames for us. And I'm going to give a shout out to Jen. She was the one that I had to go to work with in the south room when I got put in there. And I says, help me to help you. And she did a really good job of helping me help the clients. And the nickname for the clients for her is the radioactive redhead. And you met Nancy. She started just the same time I did, but seems I wasn't hired for sure yet. Nancy's got a month on me. And she is so much help. Also, for the things I do, she's able to explain some of the stuff just as good as Jen on how to help a blind person accomplish something. So hats off to those two ladies for sure. And then there's one young lady that I've worked with for 7 years now, except for during COVID, would be Heather. She's in charge of our north room. And she calls me Grandpa. One day she made the mistake of calling me Dad. And the clients, they call me the old man. And I don't realize I'm old until they say something. Because
I can relate to that, Gary. Well, those are wonderful testimonies. And I bet if those three people were here right now, they'd say similar things about you and how much they probably appreciate your work every day and how you help them take it to another level.
I believe they would.
I believe they would. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing, you know, so many things with us today, and being, you know, really willing to be vulnerable with us. I personally really appreciate it because I've had people in my life that, have stopped drinking, which allowed them to be the people they were to me. So, it's a blessing. It's a true blessing. So thank you for sharing that story. Can you, you know, just in your mind, what can others out there, other people, you know, watching today, what do you think they can learn, you know, from your story?
Well, from my story, this is how I do it. I think of what could be done, how it could be done, pictured in my mind, and try to accomplish it. No task is too hard to try. That's the way I do different things. I always think of what needs to be done first, picture it in my mind, and I'd go to and do it the way I think I can do it safely and stuff. Granted, I was able to see. I had 20/20 vision, but I would picture it in my mind. And verbal help means a lot because they're describing something that I'm going to touch, what needs to be done. And like for me, if you do that, you can accomplish more than what you have. Don't let yourself down. Just go for it. A lot of questions asked, you'll finally get a right answer.
Yeah. Yeah, don't ever sell yourself short.
Correct.
Beautiful. I'm gonna remember that. And when I listen back to this podcast, I'm gonna take some notes on what you just said. There was some really good advice in there. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, so wonderful to have you today. Gary Otto, Life Enrichment Associate at Epic Enterprise. And I must say, I can't think of a more appropriate title than Life Enrichment for, you know, the way you describe how you have enriched others' lives over your lifetime, not just in the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. So that's very apropos, as they say. And again, you know, I'm Chris Davies, and this has been the Minnesota APSE Podcast, Season 4, Episode 3. And I always like to remind everybody out there, Gary, it goes a lot in line with the philosophies and the belief system that you have. And that's simply that if you believe it, you can achieve it.
Correct. Don't be afraid to try.